Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. China's crackdown of its ethnic Uyghur citizens in Xinjiang Autonomous Province is lately making headlines on the international press, where allegations are that one out of every six Uyghur population is currently in China's notorious re-education camps. People in those camps are subjected to systematic brainwashing by the authorities, and lately China is extending its repression beyond its borders, and such signs are increasingly seen in Central Asia. For example, as per local reports, currently there are hundreds of Kazakhstani nationals in China's re-education camps. In Kazakh government is either helpless or its efforts aren't proving effective to address these issues. On today's Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast, we are here to discuss the insight and nature of this challenge to Central Asian nationals, why it is affecting them, and it is possible implications going forward. To discuss all these, I am joined by Alim Saitov, Director of Radio Free Asia's Uyghur Service. Jean Bonin is joining us, who is Central Asia-based researcher specializing in Xinjiang affairs. Galim Bukhash is with us, who is joining from Prague. Galim is the senior editor at the Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Kazakh service. Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog. Kishlok Owozi is with us, who is also in Prague. Welcome on board, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. So let's get to it. So a couple of days ago, Jean, a court procedure involving an ethnic Kazakh woman from China in Kazakhstan kind of refreshed the plight of Chinese Kazakhs in our memories. I guess her deportation hearing is currently dropped, but I believe she's not the only ethnic Kazakh who's currently facing such a challenge. So tell us, please, how widespread is this situation?
It's very widespread. I mean, I guess I'll start by introducing a sort of, there's a volunteer organization here in Almaty. They're called Atajurt Jastari, and they're kind of an unofficial volunteer organization. They're very small, and they've been campaigning against these camps, and so they've been meeting with a lot of, for example, they also helped with the Saragossa Albay trial, is the one that you mentioned, but they've also been meeting with a lot of relatives of people who have been detained in Xinjiang.
Yeah.
And I mean, since for the past maybe a month or two, I mean, they've had tons and tons of people coming into their office, either people coming into their office here in Almaty daily, and some of these people are driving from places like Jharkhand, which is 3 hours away, or from other places that can be quite far away, to file their testimonies, usually video testimonies, their complaints. And other times the volunteer group itself goes to different places and collects these testimonies. And so, I mean, I've talked to them and they've said that recently it's been, you know, they've had days where it's like they have 20 different parties basically coming in and filing their complaints, you know, per day. So there's quite a lot of relatives affected. And I think they said something that, you know, starting from a year and a half ago, they have close to 1,000 documented testimonies from relatives. So, yes, it's quite a lot.
Galim, because of your family background, you are connected to each side of this border. And also because of your profession as a Kazakh journalist, you are following this very closely. So what's your take on this, the impact of this crackdown in Xinjiang on Kazakhs?
Yeah, speaking about Xinjiang Kazakhs, for the last 2 years, we're getting so many complaints from the region and from other Kazakh diasporas living mainly in Europe. So there are so many households affected, families divided, and mainly families who has members traveling to Kazakhstan for many reasons have been affected. And in Kazakhstan, of course, for the last 27 years, there were so many ethnic Kazakhs from Xinjiang getting naturalized, getting Kazakh citizenship. But as later was realized, some of them have kept their Chinese ID documents, permanent residence, in order to continue receiving, you know, pensions and other payments. But for the last 2 years, the control has been getting very strict, and some of them were invited back to China and got arrested. And in Kazakhstan, there are hundreds of Xinjiang Kazakhs who have more than one or two relatives living in Xinjiang and getting detained and placed in those political re-education camps.
Earlier, we were talking with Bruce Alim about you, and Bruce described you like you are sitting on the gold mine of information when it comes to this crackdown in Xinjiang. So what's your perspective on this? Why Kazakhs are getting in trouble?
Obviously, we see a big shift in policy of the Chinese government since Chen Quanguo, the current party secretary, was appointed in August 2016. And prior to that, of course, he was a party secretary of Tibet for 5 years, who basically put down all this Tibetan resistance to Chinese rule. He's a hardliner, one of the Politburo members. Then once he arrived in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region, then he began this heavy-handed repression, targeting, of course, Uyghurs are the majority, Uyghurs, Kazakhs, Kyrgyz, all the Turkic and Muslim peoples who live in what is now the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region. Then we see the ripple effect. A lot of Kazakhs obviously fled to Kazakhstan. Some Kyrgyz fled to Kyrgyzstan. We see this spillover effect. That's why the issue kind of becoming something big in Kazakhstan within the Kazakh community, Kyrgyz community. And they're all focusing on what is happening in Xinjiang all of a sudden. And through our reporting and investigation, speaking to Chinese officials, Uyghur officials, speaking to the residents in the region, speaking to Uyghurs, Kazakhs, Kyrgyz, what we have realized is the Chinese government had a fundamental change of policy toward the region, region's original indigenous population. Basically, China viewed this territory, now they always wanted to incorporate, integrate, make it part of China, just like Henan province or other provinces, basically. And China has always had a very uneasy existence with Xinjiang or the people who live in Xinjiang. It's just like Soviet Union had the same problem with Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, because historically, these territories were not part of Russia or Soviet Union. It was occupied territories. Similarly, Xinjiang, which the Uyghurs, the local Kazakh, Kyrgyz all call East Turkestan, had the same similar issue. So after 1949, the Chinese communists took over the region with the support of Soviet Union, Stalin. This territory kind of became part of China. But initially, when China was weak, its control was weak, it played nice. It granted so-called Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region, allowed Uyghurs, Kazakhs, Kyrgyz, all to have their own language, religious rights, respect, they have their own schools, whatnot. But now China believes it's confident enough to deal with the indigenous population of this territory, Uyghurs, Kazakhs, Kyrgyz, and all the other Turkic people who do not resemble mainly majority Han Chinese people, who do not share their cultural, religious beliefs and values, just to make them assimilate them into Chinese by locking them to this re-education camps, by reprogramming them into Chinese. This is what is happening right now. That's why they're not only targeting the majority Uyghurs, they also see the Kazakhs, the Kyrgyz, and the Tatar, all of these peoples as a problem.
So, Alim, we know it is really horrible and terrible how Uyghurs are treated, but we also know that they are politically active, and China might have their own reservations about it. But what about Kazakhs and Kyrgyz? I don't hear anything about their political activeness or anything like that. So what is it that Kazakh and Kyrgyz or Tatars are getting in trouble?
From the Chinese perspective, they're all the same. You know, Uyghurs, Kazakh, Kyrgyz, Uzbek, Tatar, they're Central Asian fundamentally, even though it's Xinjiang is part of China currently, but historically, the people who lived in what's now Xinjiang, they belong to Central Asia. They don't belong to China or East Asia. And also the name Xinjiang in Chinese, Xin means new, Jiang means land. So it means it's new territory, new dominion. And so China has this uncomfortable existence with this territory. But of course, the Uyghurs have been more active in resisting Chinese government's repression there, and also seeking independence since 1949. But if you look at the history prior to 1949, it wasn't only the Uyghurs. In 1944, for example, the Soviet Union supported not just the Uyghur independence, support the Uyghurs, Kazakhs, Kyrgyz, Uzbek, even Mongols. Together, they had established the Second East Turkestan Republic. So it wasn't just the Uyghurs. So Chinese see this from history, not just recent times. for them is they are similar people, same Turkic people, same Muslim people. They share the same similar language, similar cultures, similar religious beliefs. At the end of the day, they are one, and they don't want to accept our culture, which is atheistic culture pretty much, and our way of life, our cultural dominance of the religion.
Is it possible for me to add my two cents?
Yeah, feel free.
One thing I would like just to, I mean, there's a couple of points I would like to make to kind of build on what Alim said. The first is, I'm not sure if it's quite that simple, not to discredit what he said, but just how do we know, and I don't know the statistics off the top of my head, how many Uzbeks are in Xinjiang right now?
Is it a question
for
Alim?
Uzbeks?
Yeah.
Yes, of Uzbek ethnicity registered.
We do have a large chunk of Uzbeks registered.
But I mean, is it a few thousand or?
There are more than a few thousand.
Tens of thousands.
Yes.
Because I mean, I had an experience in China in April in the city of Yiwu, which is close to Shanghai, where there's a lot of Central Asian businessmen and also a lot of people from Xinjiang. And I just remember being very surprised because then an Uzbek friend that I had heard had gone back to Xinjiang. Came back one day and I just asked him, I'm like, I thought you were gone, you know, like, because it's very hard now for a lot of people from Xinjiang to leave Xinjiang and go to other parts of China to do business or other things. They often have to get permission, and Uyghurs especially. But he basically said, well, like, I'm an Uzbek, so like, I don't, like, those restrictions don't really affect me. So I'm wondering if it's, it's still, you know, there is some difference there. The other thing is that, I would just like to comment on the Kazakh issue. I think even, you know, all the other points notwithstanding, I think a big thing for me that almost makes it impossible for the Kazakhs not to be affected is the fact that it's very clear that, now we can kind of see China's rhetoric changing from kind of denying the existence of these camps to just right. kind of saying, oh, well, they're vocational centers or they're for criminals. And then, you know, but for a very long time, I mean, they've been trying, and I think they're still trying to make Xinjiang an information vacuum. They don't want information getting out of there easily. And when you have Kazakhs who are basically living there together with Uyghurs, they speak very similar languages. Many of them speak Uyghur. They understand, they have very similar cultures, they have similar faith. You know, they see what's happening. It's not the same as, you know, Han Chinese. They can live there and they often live in very segregated ways. So the Han Chinese can, even if they see what's happening, they're kind of removed from it. A lot of them can even turn a blind eye on that and not really care. But I think with Kazakhs, you know, it would be impossible, and especially if they're allowed to just go back and forth between Kazakhstan and communicate with their relatives in Kazakhstan while they're seeing all of these horrible things taking place in Xinjiang and knowing what's happening because they communicate with the Uyghurs, they communicate with the other Kazakhs, the locals. I think it's almost inevitable that they're almost like collateral damage in a sense, because even if they didn't want to do anything to the Kazakhs, they would have to, just because, you know, otherwise the information would just leak out really, really quickly into Kazakhstan. And so for me, I think that's also a major point, just to add to what William has.
Okay, but let's get the, Bruce, your point in this. You know, a couple of months ago, you did this story on troubles that ethnic Kyrgyz in China was facing. Was it a part of the same trend there, or Chinese authorities had some different reasons to treat them in a way that they do?
No, I mean, the Chinese authorities have just been expanding their campaign. It was Uyghurs, and then we started to hear that it was also Kazakhs, and then finally we started to get information that it was actually affecting Kyrgyz. There's been problems with the Chinese and Uyghurs, you know, again, as Aleem mentioned, I mean, this has been going on for millennia out there. So, but more recently, of course, you know, the Uyghurs would prefer not to be under Han rule. They would prefer to have their own state. But as actually, it was kind of strange how it evolved, because, of course, there has been a campaign against Uyghurs for a while. And we know that China has this deal where they got the three evils, right? So it's separatism, extremism, and terrorism. And for really a couple decades, the Uyghurs fell under the separatism category. That was really what bothered the officials in Beijing, was that they viewed Uyghurs as separatists. Once the problem started in the Middle East, in Syria and in Iraq, and some Uyghurs managed to start posting videos on the internet. They had joined the so-called Islamic State or other groups or something, and they posted videos on the internet threatening China. At least in the Chinese view, they moved from being separatists to actually being terrorists or extremists. China had not wanted to put the religious role into this problem at all for the longest time. But once those videos appeared, then they all of a sudden switched. Like I said, the Uyghurs Uyghurs moved to a different stage in the eyes of Beijing, where they were suddenly terrorists and extremists. And as the paranoia, I guess, grew in Beijing, they started to view not just Uyghur Muslims, but it evolved into this problem against suspect Muslims in Xinjiang province. And that's where you started to get the Kazakhs picked up and then the Kyrgyz picked up. You know, Alim would know more about this, or maybe even Gene, than I would, but I've never seen any evidence that the Tajiks are affected, which is very strange. So it really does seem to be strictly the Turkic Muslims of Xinjiang.
For the Tajiks, do you mean the ones in the Tashkorgan area, for example?
Yes.
What China classifies as Tajiks. Then I think I have, this is only through a friend who's researched those Tajik people, and he has a lot of Tajik friends, and I think he also said that they were kind of, at the very least, the impression that I got was that they were also a bit tense, in the sense that they were afraid of being affected by the same stuff. But yeah, I haven't seen the reports either. So, but
Alim, your thoughts on that? Why is that?
Why is what? Sorry.
Why Tajiks being excluded from this crackdown?
I wouldn't say Tajiks were excluded, but I think they feel the same effects. The policy is it's a regional policy. It's directed to all this originally indigenous population of this region. Tajiks may feel the effects. Maybe their Tajik population is very small. Maybe not that many Tajiks have been locked up. Or in our interviews with some Kyrgyz, they're just too afraid to talk, actually, about the situation of Kyrgyz, for example. Even in Kyrgyzstan, it's that bad. But for the Tajiks, I think it's just we don't know much information. But from the Chinese government point of view, Tajik, Kyrgyz, Kazakh, Uyghur, Uzbek, it's all the same. You know, if you look at the Chinese history, you know, the only time the Chinese government, whatever their government dynasty, feels safe is when the so-called barbarians on the edges, like us, they call, when they're fully assimilated into the Chinese nation or accept Chinese rule, speak their language, practice their culture, then they feel comfortable.
Yeah, Alim, just quickly, so what number of people are we talking about here? I mean, the ethnic Kazakh, Kyrgyz, Uzbek, or Tatars. I mean, the non-Uyghur ethnic Turkic groups that are under pressure. What's their number?
Number? Uyghurs are, according to Chinese government, 11 point some million.
What about non-Uyghur ethnic Turkic?
Kazakh population, according to Chinese statistics, around 2 million-ish. The Kyrgyz is, I think, several hundred thousand. The Uzbek, several hundred thousand. Tatar is a little less, and Tajiks a little less in terms of the number of the population. Of course, the Han they're nearly half, if not more, of the region because of the government sponsorship of the mass settlement of the Chinese population.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually, Uzbeks, I think there are around 20,000 Uzbeks only.
Is it?
In Xinjiang.
Mm-hmm.
And after Uyghurs comes Han group, which is around 10 million, and Kazakhs, the third biggest diaspora. Xinjiang population, Turkish population, around 2 million. That's why I think their problems are more visible than Tajiks and other smaller groups.
I would also agree with that. I think there's a very practical side to it because if you look at the way, for example, that China censors the internet and how China just deals with activists in general, not even in Xinjiang, you know, it's usually when they think that there's some sort of independent group that's free of their control that they see as a threat that they take action. And that's why, the Kazakhs are there, 1.5 million, Uyghurs are 10 million, then, you know, they're kind of the biggest groups there that could do that. And I think that's, so the smaller minorities, I think, would be safer for that reason.
We discussed a lot about these ethnic groups and why they are in trouble. So is there any identical feature among those who get in trouble in China?
As for the Kazakhs in Xinjiang, most of them have been accused of expressing so-called trans-border sympathy to Kazakhstan. It's their main difference from other Turkic groups. Because for the last, quarter century after the collapse of the Soviet Union, the Kazakh diaspora in Xinjiang have built very strong ties with the mainland Kazakhs. And in trade, in culture, and every single field. The public figures, politicians of Kazakhstan, pop stars, they would often travel to Xinjiang. They would tell me that no wedding party can be done without a Kazakh pop star in Xinjiang. So all of this sympathy, overpouring sympathy towards Kazakhstan, of course, seemed very, you know, troublesome for Beijing, I think. And this first factor, major factor, I guess, it's political loyalty, demanding from the Xinjiang Kazakhs political loyalty. The second one is it's a recent factor. It's a religious factor. So some of those detained people have been in contact with some Uyghur religious leaders, activists. And the third factor is just common people. They don't know even why they've been put in these education camps, some elder people, women. And the fourth category is Kazakhstani citizens. Even Kazakhstani citizens got in trouble in Xinjiang. And the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Kazakhstan confirmed us that there are several hundred of still Kazakhstani citizens being placed in those camps.
Jin, I just wondered about your thoughts on this. So what background of people are more likely to get in trouble? I mean, there are two different groups that we are talking about here. Let's talk about both of them, the Kazakhs or the Kyrgyz who live in Xinjiang or the other locations in China, and ethnic Kyrgyz or Kazakh who are visiting China with the passports of a third country. So what are the, who are the likely people who might get in trouble?
From the people that I've talked to that have gotten in trouble, it's hard for me to say. It seems, I mean, it doesn't always seem to make a lot of sense. I mean, some of the Kazakh nationals that I've talked to that have gotten in trouble, these are always Kazakh, people with Kazakhstan passports. These are people who were born originally in Xinjiang. So on their passport, it says this. I don't think anybody who was actually a Kazakh who was born in Kazakhstan who would get a visa and go to China would get in trouble. At least I haven't heard of this. I've honestly, it's really hard to say. I mean, I think it's just people, from the stories that I've heard, it's people go back there or to visit or for business, and then they get interrogated, and then they get their documents taken away. A lot of the times we hear this, what I mean to me is really an excuse that they say that you have dual citizenship or you haven't properly canceled your Chinese citizenship, even though some of the people that have been sent to camps for this, you know, they got their Kazakh citizenship, you know, 15, 20 years ago, and they gave back their Chinese passport and everything around, you know, a long time ago, and they're still being told that you didn't properly sign out of your Chinese citizenship, so you have to go back to Xinjiang and do it, and then they get detained. So I've heard stories like that, but none of them have struck me as very religious or, you know, even activist or anything. I mean, it's some people go on business, some people go to visit, and they get stuck there. I mean, a lot of the stories I've heard have been like that. It's really hard to pinpoint any specific characteristics of the people that visit from Kazakhstan and get detained.
Okay, so when these people are arrested, then what happens? How the troubles that we were talking about looks like on the ground? This is another story, and let's continue the Majlis podcast discussing these aspects of the development very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast, we are discussing the impact of China's crackdown in Xinjiang on nationals of Central Asian countries or ethnic minorities with connections to Central Asia who are in Xinjiang. Joining me in the discussion are Alim Saitov, Director of Radio Free Asia's Uyghur Service, Jean Bonin, independent researcher based in the region, Galim Bokash, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Kazakh Service, Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlak Awazi. I am Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, gentlemen. So let's start, Alim, with you. So once these people are questioned or detained, then what happens? I heard most of them are sent to China's re-education camp. So tell us a little bit about this, the re-education camp. What is this and how it looks like?
Since Chen Chengguo came in August 2018, we see this political re-education camps have been built and popped up in all over the region, basically. And more being built right now. Some are very big. They can house thousands of people. And in our investigation, especially speaking with officials in Kashgar, Khotan, we realized, for example, in Kashgar, when we spoke to officials, 120,000 Uyghurs detained in Kashgar prefecture alone. Then when we were able to speak to the relatives of those who were detained, or some of the very few ones who were released for some reason. You know, they describe what happened in those camps. These are not just the, you know, like schools, like training centers, like the Chinese government claims. They are actually prisons. They have high walls, they have barbed wires, they have fully armed Chinese police and the special police guarding these places. Early in the morning, they start with a flag raising ceremony. They raise a Chinese flag, then they start to sing patriotic Chinese songs like Without Chinese Communist Party, Without New China, and they start singing songs praising Xi Jinping. And then the problem is also there are dozens of them quartered in a very small room, so they can't sleep all together face up. They have to side by side, and the one group sleeps first and the second group sleeps, and like one toilet, and it also has a camera, video camera inside. And also these people are, you know, because this is political indoctrination, they have to do all of this in Chinese. As you know, Chinese language is foreign language for the Uyghurs, Kazakhs, Kyrgyz, Uzbek, for all the Central Asians. Chinese language has nothing to do with Turkic language. So a lot of Uyghurs, Kazakh, Kyrgyz, you know, that's not their native language. They don't speak this language. A lot of elders, you know, men, women especially, they don't know this language. So they are detained. They have to recite this in Chinese. If they cannot recite or remember them in Chinese language, they're punished. They're locked up. They're handcuffed. Their feet are cuffed. If they are not happy, they are not chained to the beds, or they're beaten up and solitarily confined, these individuals. And as a result, we see, and also the medicines of all these people, they cannot take medicines to their own homes. And their family members are not informed. For example, if my brother is taken to one of these camps, yeah, or somebody, a Kazakh person, you know, a Chinese former national who went to Kazakhstan, become the citizen like Jin just described, comes back to China at the border, he's detained and sent to the camps, and his family members are not, you know, told. So the family members do not know where they're taken, when they're taken, and what the hell they're going through in these camps. And they cannot find their relatives. They want to give money or bring food or medicine. They simply cannot do this. As a result, we see a lot of people, you know, especially elderly people, they die in these camps. And obviously, the Chinese government doesn't tell, you know, who died in their custody, because they don't even admit the existence of these camps. So this is what's happening. And also, the problem is, this is against Chinese laws, in addition to international laws. These are extrajudicial detentions. And most importantly, once these people are inside these camps, they do not know, nobody knows when they will come out. It's not like they are sent to a court, the court sentenced to them like a year or 2 or 5 years, so these people know. They will come out in 2 years or 3 years. These people do not know. So this is kind of, some people call this like concentration camps. Some people, some media experts call internment camps. Some of them even call like very much like Nazi camps.
Galim, the case of this woman and the court procedure that I referred to earlier in Kazakhstan involving an ethnic Kazakh woman who I believe was instructor in one of those camps earlier, you had a chance to talk to this woman. So what did you learn about her experience of being in one of those camps and being instructor in one of those camps? What did she tell you?
She told so much during the trial as well. So she revealed so much information about those re-education camps, about the number of the people detained, methods of interrogation, conditions. So it was quite a unique trial where for the first time many people could get inside information from the former instructor. And Sara Gulsavutbaya was very helpful in revealing those horrible facts. She was herself a, I guess, kindergarten teacher.
In one of those camps?
In Xinjiang.
I think she was a director of a kindergarten, if I remember.
Yeah, first she told us that she started as a teacher at the kindergarten, then was promoted to the position of director, and then somehow was spotted by the local party officials and got that job. She was instructor, language instructor, I guess. And
So what did she say about the methods that you mentioned, the interrogation methods or the conditions?
Interrogation methods, Sayra Gulsoutbay and other, you know, former prisoners like Khairat Samarkhan, who we interviewed. Interrogation starts at the district level. For example, Burul Togay district level of Altai region. It lasts for two or three days. Then they're sent to one of those local re-education camps. So they ask about the party policies, about the main principles of Chinese policies, about the last party forums, you know, documents, decisions, declarations. And, you know, in case of failing, in case of giving incorrect answers, they are beaten. They are, you know, tortured in some cases. Not everyone, but some of them are tortured. And after that, they're sent to those educations. And they say that the real, the true hell starts over there in the re-education camp, because it's overcrowded, as Alim told us. The same descriptions. And there are new questions appear in those education camps regarding religious background, regarding religious views, and beating continues there. Very interesting detail I heard from one of those detained Kazakhs who somehow got back to Kazakhstan. They were forced to listen to Chinese music, to Chinese songs performed by Dimash, this pop singer from Kazakhstan, who is very popular in China now. And one of them told me that he saw old Kazakh was being forced to eat pork.
Jin, what do you see? What's the ultimate goal here from Chinese perspective?
Oof, that's you're asking me a very very big question. I think that's very hard to say, but if I had to try to get into their heads, I imagine that they're just trying to basically sinicize the whole region and in what, you know, what they call stabilize the region. So make it, you know, a sort of a very Chinese part of China that, you know, doesn't have any of its own kind of, you know, separate culture, separate, you know, identity. And I think, you know, a lot of that may just be in line with just what the Communist Party is doing all over China, where they want to kind of, you know, standardize everything and kind of remove all sorts of kind of individual, uncontrolled, free of CCP party control expression. But I think also, I think there's also the thing with the whole Belt and Road Initiative, because they, I mean, that Xinjiang is a very big part of that that initiative. And I think they want to, they want the whole place to be basically be sterile so that there can be no problems when that whole initiative kicks off, I think.
If they have any economic thinking behind this, I think the timing couldn't be, I believe, worse. Because on one hand, you know, this repression. On the other hand, China's, you know, coming to Central Asia with billions of additional investment with the Belt and Road project. So, Bruce, what is your thinking behind this strategy? What they plan?
Well, I'll be a little harsher than Gene was very, very diplomatic about that. I mean, it's the cultural. They're looking for the cultural extermination of non-Han Chinese. That's what they want. You know, I mean, we've seen this in the Soviet Union to some extent too. What they wanted was some, was everyone to be thinking along the same line. You are, you're ethnic, no ethnic distinctions, no religious distinctions. The priority here is that you are a citizen of the People's Republic of China, and anything after that is of no importance at all. So they're trying to get rid of these, the thinking that I'm not Han, that I'm not from this group, that I, my people have a separate history than the Han. They want everyone to be on board behind this government. It didn't work in the Soviet Union. It's unlikely to work here. It's very short-term thinking, which surprised me, because the Chinese are, people credit them, usually credit them with more long-term views of the world, but this just doesn't seem to work. I mean, for a while, you know, and again, similar to the Soviet Union, they were showcasing these kind of areas. These that we have, China has this many different ethnic groups and this many different religions are practiced, and, you know, it shows that we're able to incorporate all kinds of different groups into our system. And they seem to have given up on that entirely in Xinjiang and decided the way to go is to make all the people of Xinjiang as close to being Han Chinese as they possibly can and break down the distinction. And it's really insulting a lot of times, you know. I mean, it's one thing to close down the mosques, and then it's another to, like, set up Communist Party headquarters there and start putting advertisements for the Chinese government on the walls of these places. I mean, it's really, you know, better to just leave the building empty or something, but they don't even do that. And, you know, and we just heard Galim said they forced people to eat pork, but they'll force them to, you know, make sure that they don't observe Ramadan, make sure that they're, you know, in cases they sponsor drinking contests and make a point of bringing Uyghurs or somebody out there to drink alcohol in public in front of everyone. Anything they can do to break down any of the walls that were set up, you know, that these people considered to be to distinguish them from the people further east in China.
I'm really curious what kind of responses it's creating in Central Asia among publics. Is there any public discussion, Galim, among your audience, as far as you could see, how people are responding to this situation, especially when it involves the ethnic Kazakh and the ethnic Kazakhs who become Kazakhstan's nationals? When they get in trouble, really the pain gets to home. So how they are responding?
The last developments in Xinjiang have changed everything. You know, the discourse, public discussion in Kazakhstan, especially among the Kazakh-speaking audience, and we can see it clearly in the Kazakh language forums. The last developments in Xinjiang, the last campaign by Beijing has sparked anger, very big disappointment among the Kazakh-speaking population of Kazakhstan. And, you know, that's why RFRL's Kazakh service coverage and reports about the Xinjiang persecutions have been very, very popular. And every week, several reports about that topic are among the most read publications. All of a sudden, the Kazakhs of Xinjiang found themselves in Uyghurs' shoes, because, of course, their neighbors, they're very closely tied by culture, by historical past. But Uyghur separatism issue, you know, has been raised by Beijing in front of the Kazakh government for a long time, for the last decades. And Kazakh government has always supported Beijing in its fighting the so-called Uyghur separatism and extremism in Xinjiang. But to be honest, personally, I have never seen the solidarity of Kazakhs with Uyghurs in Xinjiang. But for the last 2 years, first signs of that solidarity has been shown. In Kazakhstan itself, there have been, you know, appeared several movements and unofficial movements, unregistered groups and organizations supporting Xinjiang Kazakhs and other ethnic minorities. And the awareness of the fate of Xinjiang people is increasing among the Kazakh-speaking audience.
So, Gene, this public resentment, anger, how is this reflected in the reaction of the Kazakh authorities? I also want to believe that the way this, the court hearing took place involving this ethnic Kazakh woman from China, I think it showed some sort of a public demonstration of that Kazakh authorities are not really ignoring this. Otherwise, they could find a way to not let this happen in such a public way. So is there any reaction do you see from the authorities, and how much of reflective is that of the public anger that Galim just mentioned?
I think that definitely the public anger has played a role. And I think that the fact that I know people who have been negotiated out of Xinjiang, basically, with the help of the authorities. And I think a lot of these are people that have been advocated for locally. And so I think you definitely cannot say that it has not played a role. I think it has. At the same time, for example, again, with the trial you mentioned with Saira Gul, I honestly, a lot of people have said, especially on August 1st, when the verdict was given, people said, yes, Kazakhstan has stood up to China. Yes, you know, this is a good sign. I'm not so sure about that. And I think that the past month the events of the past month have shown that basically, you know, what happened with Saira Gul is that she was basically kind of free to talk to people for a day or two. And then her lawyer, I'm not going to go into accusations or anything like that, but basically then her lawyer kind of almost did a 180 and then quickly went and said, okay, you shouldn't talk to anybody. You shouldn't talk to reporters. You shouldn't meet with people. And she basically went on a sort of almost quarantine where she and her family were basically taken, you know, they moved somewhere and nobody could meet with them. And so, I actually saw her 3 days ago. There was also a reporter there, and this reporter tried to get an interview, but Saira Gul basically declined it. So she's not, I think there's pressure from the authorities that she should not be talking to reporters or telling her story about the camps. Mm. I think that's very clear. And so for me, the way that this verdict worked out is it was a sort of compromise, because on the one hand, they let her stay, they didn't extradite her, and this pleased kind of this, again, to stop this public anger that you mentioned. But at the same time, it was basically they silenced her, so she cannot, you know, so they kind of did what China would have wanted them to do in some sense. They kind of, they took a very important witness and they made it so that she could not go and simply just talk about the camps. So I'm not so, you know, I think still the Kazakh government is still very, very, very open to cooperating with China on these things. But I mean, they're playing a sort of balancing act. I mean, I don't think they love what's happening in Xinjiang, but at the same point, I don't see them as, you know, just being angry and, you know, wanting to stand up to China. I feel like there's still a lot of cooperation there. And so it's hard to say, you know, which one is stronger, the public anger or the cooperation with China. But they're both there and they're both present.
Yeah. Hmm. Very interesting. I know the troubles that we discussed today, its impact on Uyghurs are way more than what we just discussed. Maybe we could perhaps come back to this topic sometime later. This is the final question, because we are really running out of the time. The final question is, the troubles that we discussed, the Kazakh, ethnic Kazakhs or Kyrgyz are getting in China, are the ones who are from China, ethnic Kazakh or Kyrgyz or Tajik Uzbeks, or the ones who are from China but obtained nationality of a different countries. So, Galim, just a final question. Is there any impact of this crackdown in Xinjiang about those Kazakhs who are not from China, who are just the Kazakh nation?
Yeah, that's really interesting to observe, because first, the Kazakh, any topic related to the Kazakh diasporas in Xinjiang was discussed within the Xinjiang Kazakhs naturalized in Kazakhstan, so-called Oralmans. Hmm. But the Sayrogul Saudbayev case was a very important point. It was a turning point, and Kazakhs from other regions of Kazakhstan paid close attention to her trial. And for example, her lawyer is from West Kazakhstan. He's a lawyer and at the same time activist, Abzal Kuspan. He's based in Uralsk. He's been working, I guess, for free to defend Sayrogul. And there are many activists from other regions supporting the Xinjiang Kazakhs, ethnic Kazakhs, and other ethnic minorities, and discussing it, talking about that, spreading the word. And this activeness is increasing, but again, I'm not sure what kind of impact will it have on the Kazakh government. As Jean said, Kazakh government's will to cooperate with China, a pragmatic policy of Astana. Because Kazakh government has always been supportive to Beijing, you know, in its regional policy in Xinjiang.
Yeah. Has there been any difficulty lately for Kazakh nationals getting Chinese visa, for example? Or has there been any challenge or additional challenge for Chinese citizens' ability to take Kazakh visa?
Of course, there are some difficulties, especially in visa issue. But these problems were there before this China's policy to re-educate its so-called disloyal Xinjiang people. Kazakhstan and China, I wouldn't say their relations are very smooth from the start, no, especially in terms of visa issues. There have been arguments, there have been so many conflicts on the ground between Astana and Beijing. And right now, you know, culmination of that visa issue was when former Chinese ambassador to Kazakhstan went public in criticizing Astana restricting visa issuing even to the Chinese diplomats and their relatives. It was several years ago. There have been always restrictions for Chinese nationals getting Kazakh visas, especially business visas for business purpose. And now China responded with its own policy restricting visa issuing for Kazakh nationals. Now, there are no individual visas for Kazakhstani citizens. So if you are a Kazakhstani national, you can apply for a Chinese visa only in a group of several people. So this kind of difficulty getting more visible. But it started before these Xinjiang persecutions.
Okay. Well, Thank you very much, Galim Bokash, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Kazakh service, for your insightful comments. And also big thanks goes to Alim Saitov, director of Radio Free Asia's Uyghur service, Jean Bonin, independent researcher based in the region, also Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlak Owazi. Thank you very much, colleagues, for being able to join us today.
Thank you.
It was really nice talking to you. So this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.